All right, welcome to Grad Talks, a series of conversations with graduate students about their work, produced in collaboration with the University of Manitoba Graduate Students Association. I'm Michael Elves, Program Director here at UMFM, and I am joined today by Cheryl Sobey, a graduate from the Human Geography Master's Program. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
So this is the first for us on Grad Talks to have someone who's already kind of handed in their thesis, right? Most of the guests we've had so far are, in the throes of putting this together, whereas you're kind of looking at it with in hindsight. Let's kind of back the train up, though. Before you did your master's in human geography, what was your undergrad in?
My undergraduate was in environmental studies, actually. So, yeah, I was fortunate during my undergrad to like meet a lot of different professors, and I took a lot of like experiential courses. So, yeah, I got to figure out what I was really interested in. And for me, working with women was really important, feminism, and as well food insecurity. Mm-hmm. That was something that's always been important to me. I grew up in the city, but my dad grew up on a farm, so I was really lucky as a kid. You know, I got to see how food was produced. We always had a garden. And, you know, to me, like people who don't have enough food to eat, it's a serious injustice.
Mm-hmm. So was it your experiences going like to your father's farm? Like, did his family still live on the farm?
My uncle did. Yeah. Growing up. So.
So then getting a sense of food security was early for you as a result of like, visiting the farm?
Yeah. And I mean, I myself did not really experience food insecurity until a couple years ago myself. So I didn't really know, you know, the extent to how much people do struggle. And for me, it was just really important to try to help and do something about it.
So did you go into your master's program kind of having a very firm sense of what you wanted to research or what you wanted to achieve out of it?
Yes, I guess in a sense. I guess you never really are totally prepared for a master's degree. But my undergraduate work, I actually did an honors thesis with the organization that I partnered with for my master's research. And I did a small study with some women looking at food insecurity and food providers in Winnipeg. So that really kind of set the stage and, you know, provided the foundation for my master's research.
So then was it a relatively easy thing to go back to Gumichik and say, hey, I want to work with you again, but this time on the master's level into something more in depth?
Yeah. So the organization, Gunniganichik, I got to know them during my undergraduate degree, and it takes time to build relationships, but, you know, we enjoyed working together. The results were important. So, yeah, I, you know, discussed with the education program manager at the time and then a program coordinator for one of the programs I worked in, which was called Honoring Gifts. And so the Honoring Gifts program was for Indigenous single mothers age 18 to 30. And it offers them like different education opportunities, training, employment training, also like life skills stuff. And it's interwoven with cultural knowledge and traditional knowledge and things like that. So, yeah, it was just a really great opportunity to keep working together.
With them having that program already, that must have helped somewhat in terms of getting interested participants in this.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why we started, you know, even talking about food insecurity is that the organization, so Gunny, they noticed that this was, you know, something that they didn't have the capacity to fully address, so food insecurity. And so they, you know, welcomed me to come take part and help out in that way. So what we actually did, because in any research, it takes time to get to know people, especially when you're talking about such personal things. So to really get to know the women and try to also help, you know, their situation in a way, we developed something called the Healthy Living Program, which was in addition to the research program, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the Healthy Living Program, we ran every Friday, and we offered women different opportunities to learn more about their health and how that's interwoven with food. So we did community gardening. We did vegan cooking classes. We did yoga. We went apple picking. Where else did we go? We went to Fort White Farms. We did workshops about stress and mental health. We did a lot of things, around food and health. And it was just such a great opportunity because it allowed us to get to know each other. And then as a result, I invited the women who took part in that and the Honoring Gifts program to take part in another research project with me, which we called Women's Right to Food. Mm-hmm. And that was more focused on the political and, you know, socioeconomic issues.
Drivers.
Yeah, related to food insecurity.
Right. So the health sort of project,
mm-hmm.
that's like completely outside of the scope of your master's
yeah.
program, but you did that as well?
But I did that as well, okay. Because in this type of research, yeah, it's really important that for me, especially doing research with any community, but especially, you know, Indigenous community, community of women, I really wanted to do something to give back as well. And also just, yeah, provide a way for us to get to know each other. And so I did participatory feminist action research. So it was really important that, you know, I spent the time. But it is a lot of work and a lot of caring work. And yeah, probably more than, you know, a master's degree would require. But
say.
I'm a very motivated and passionate person. So,
right.
Yeah, it was such a good opportunity, though, because, you know, we made friends. We even went to Folk Fest. It was so cool. Yeah, just we all tried new experiences together, and it helped us feel comfortable and the women feel comfortable to talk about, you know, more difficult issues.
Because, right.
You know, around food insecurity, we found that it wasn't just about food insecurity. You know, there's lots of things. Poverty, you know, there's relationships, you know, child and family services, you know, experiences with housing and homelessness. There's all these things that, you know, wrap around food insecurity. So,
right.
Yeah.
How much like theoretical or like preparatory research did you have to do leading into this? Like, was there a lot of kind of reading around the processes involved?
Yeah. I mean, in grad school, you're only required to take 4 courses.
Right.
So, but yeah, I guess my undergraduate research provided me some background information. And then the graduate courses I took 2 like methods courses. So one was anthropology and ethnographic research. So that allowed me to learn about participant observation. So that's just spending time with people doing research. And then I also took a couple courses, one about geography and then another one about food, geographies of food. Yeah, and then a lot of it is learning as you go, too, because for me, it was the first time doing a lot of that, you know, the types of things I was doing, especially the data collection. I'd never really done a lot of focus groups before. We did go-along interviews, which was something totally new to me, and that's actually traveling through the city with... I traveled through the city with women on what we called their food journeys. So every place that they need to go to access food. And so that was like really new and exciting, but we kind of figured it out together. And that's kind of the beauty of participatory research, I guess, because you can, and feminist research, because you can try different methods. It's really flexible. And yeah, you can have, you know, these really deep experiences with people and get to know them.
That experience of traveling with them to ascertain kind of how they get their food. Like, how are you, like, are you tracking that? Like, are you writing down, like, time and distance and these kinds of things? Or, like, what
yeah.
really are you trying to quantify or otherwise capture?
So I guess for me, it was more about the experience.
Okay.
So, I mean, I did obviously record the time when we left and all the places that we went. But I audio recorded everything, our conversation. And for me, it was more about the experience of, you know, what does it take to go on a food journey? So all the decisions that go around, you know, figuring out what it is that you need to get and how do you get it? Because if you don't have a car, if you have children and you're, you know, it's the middle of winter and you're relying on bus schedules. So it was kind of looking at what are their process preparing for these journeys? Where are all the places that we go? You know, what kinds of things are they purchasing? What kind of, you know, experiences happen along the way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was really interesting, though, and just to see that, you know, we found that food journeys are, it's not just about the actual journey. There's all these other decisions. Plus, women just didn't go to get food. If you're going out, you know, and you're with your kids, you're going to try to make as many stops as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for some women, it was taking the bus one way or taking a cab another way because they couldn't fit all their groceries. So, yeah, it was more, you know, about the qualitative aspect for us.
Right. That this is... At its core, this is about food insecurity, but you're also looping in like things like issues of transportation and infrastructure, childcare.
And then like one of the most important things that we came out of this research that we found is just experiences of racism in the city as women travel on these journeys. So whether that's, you know, racist comments on the bus, you know, bus drivers not even picking them up with, you know, if they have a stroller, because women always said like everyone hated having to move back on the bus for a stroller.
Really,
so the bus drivers would just drive by the women sometimes. Like there was one story in the middle of winter, one woman had five kids and the bus driver just drove right past her instead of asking people just to make some space. And then just, you know, comments in grocery stores. And yeah, so it really captured, sadly, I mean, you know, prejudice of people in public in Winnipeg and women faced, yeah, you know, discriminatory encounters.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned, you know, that this is the participant observation, that this is like being with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like behind a one-way mirror or whatever,
yeah.
Right? The other thing that I find interesting about this is that like the subjects are the researchers in some way, like they're mm-hmm. part of this process, which, I mean, based on other sort of people I've talked to, it seems kind of anomalous. But is this kind of becoming more of a trend in research to involve the people in this way?
Mm-hmm. I'd say in some types of research, in community-based research, definitely, because it's about participants and researchers coming together in a collaborative way, and as well as feminist research. So for me, like drawing on the principles of feminist research of trying to, you know, come together in a more collaborative way. Yeah. So it's really important in feminist research studies, and I guess also in action research studies. Yeah, but not everyone does it. And I'm hoping that more and more researchers do this, but mm-hmm. it is a lot more time and effort as opposed to doing like, say, secondary data collection or something.
Right. Like logistically, or like kind of hoops you might have to jump through, because I know, you know, there's usually when you're going to do interviews or research on human subjects, there's, you know, like shirk mm-hmm. rules you have to follow, or like, you know, release forms you have to get and stuff like that. Is there an extra layer or level of that kind of red tape in order to have someone actually be a participant in it rather than simply like a subject?
Yes. Well, anytime you're doing research with humans, the university makes you go through an ethics process.
Mm-hmm.
So that process, yeah, it's cumbersome sometimes. You have to, you know, develop all of your research question guides to kind of get them to approve. You have to get consent forms, things like that. So it is a bit more work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing research, anytime you talk to people, it's just what's required by the university. And then I guess in one of my courses, my ethnographic research methods course, we had to do like a online tutorial. Now they make you do like ethics online tutorials, just to make sure that people are doing, you know, research in the most ethical way.
Right.
So
the having your questions approved, that process, I find that curious, because of course, once you start the research process, I have to imagine there's new questions that arise, or like
mm-hmm.
you realize quickly, oh, this question is way off base or unimportant, or
yeah,
like just scratches the surface, and then you want to pursue it like a different path or go down that path further. Do you go back and get like the new questions approved, or like how do you kind of handle something like that?
I guess, yeah, maybe I wasn't that clear. I meant like I had to get like, I just had to give them a sample of like my focus group scripts and my interview guides. But that is, it is a good point that you brought up about research questions, because my research questions did definitely change over the course of my project, because what you have to do is you have to do a research proposal that you submit to your committee at the beginning of your degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I took a leave of absence for a couple of years. So then when I went back to write my final thesis, my research questions had definitely changed, just from some of our findings and things that, you know, what we realized this research is, you know, really about. Because when I first started, I was very, you know, it was about food insecurity and health. And then now I realize that this is, you know, a lot more political. There's a lot more issues that are involved with food insecurity and, you know, especially just the experiences of racism that came out, and how racism and prejudice does really impact women's lives, and their ability to be food secure, but also just their ability to access resources and, you know, deal with these different government institutions that they have to deal with.
Did that leave give you kind of the distance to see that change, or was that something that you'd probably intuited already in sort of the initial research process?
I guess we had kind of, yeah, we definitely kind of talked a lot about that. And that's what came out of all of our focus group discussions. That's what the women talked about the most. But I guess taking a leave did allow me to see things in a bit of a different way, because I moved away from Winnipeg and then coming back to Winnipeg, kind of seeing the political climate now. And unfortunately, not that much has changed. And when I was, you know, presenting my thesis, that's when transit cuts, you know, proposed cuts to transit and all these issues. It was really disappointing to see that, you know, those things aren't being addressed. But on the other hand, there are things that are really amazing in Winnipeg, and, you know, people are really fighting back and resisting, you know, Got Bannock. I'm not sure if you've heard that organization. Meet Me at the Bell Tower. There's now like a women-only taxi. So there's lots of things that are changing because the community has really mobilized, and that's been amazing to see, because when we first started our research was when like Idle No More just first came out. And so because of that, the women at the time said they noticed a lot more people, like racism was really coming out, because with that movement, then it was like people all of a sudden just
reactive
and then being much more overt with their racism. And then now it's like there's, it's kind of really exciting to see that there's a lot more resistance. And, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report came out. And yeah, I really have hope that we can, you know, work more on reconciliation in Winnipeg.
Right. So coming back from the leave, what was kind of like the first thing you did to kind of get back into the process?
Like? Oh, gosh. Well, I guess it was, just going back and looking at what I had written so far and breaking everything down into my chapters and, you know, getting my advisor to review it. And yeah, it was kind of a long process, and I got really distracted working on animal rights activism in the summer. But in the fall, I really had a big push just to, you know, really finalize this. And yeah, it's been a long time coming. So it was nice to, you know, finish this chapter for myself, but also for the women in my research who put in so much, you know, time and effort, as well as the organization that we partnered with. Like, and now my plans are to write like a community report for them out of, you know, maybe make it 20, 30 pages, just take some of the major findings from our thesis in ways that we can, you know, try to mobilize the community and take further action.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you've done some other events or things kind of out of this and not just a thesis, right? That there was a workshop and some other stuff. Was that baked into you doing this research? Like, you knew you were going to do this stuff coming out of it? Or was it kind of like it spontaneously grew out of it that like, oh, we should give this extra life?
No, that was something we had always planned to do, because participatory action research, like the goal is to have some form of like social change, or you try to mobilize your knowledge. So what we did, and you know, I split my project into three phases, and in the third phase of our project was called our knowledge translation or knowledge mobilization phase. So with that, we got together and tried to figure out in what ways can we take these results and share it with the public to have an impact, and provide an opportunity for the women to have their voices heard and speak for themselves about these issues, because they're the ones who have the most knowledge and know how to solve it. So we had, of course, a ton of ideas, and we didn't get to do everything. But what we did do is we were interviewed twice on CKUW, on Wooden Spoons, with a colleague of ours that helped out with the project. So Mary Jane, she runs a cooking school, and she also does this radio show. So we got to share research there. We also did a conference presentation. It was called Who's Winnipeg? Settler Colonialism and Neoliberalism in Winnipeg, something like that. That was a few years ago, and it was organized by a lot of researchers in Winnipeg. And that was like a community conference kind of workshop, and the women got to share their stories, and it was really, really powerful experience for them. And then we designed a workshop for the Growing Local Conference. And that was really amazing as well, because we just, had a lot of people, and we all arranged all the chairs in a circle and just, you know, got to talk about these issues, and the women got to share their stories. So it was really powerful. And we have an ongoing Facebook page that we post things, you know, relevant to our research. And yeah, I mean, I still hope that I've been back in touch with my participants. So I'm hoping that maybe we can, yeah, do a follow-up interview, because I'd love to hear more about what, you know, what's changed for them and what ideas do they have now. So
right. Now, the workshop development, like, how, like, do you kind of take a back seat in that and let the women who were participants kind of come up with the framework for that themselves? Or, like, what's your kind of role in something like that?
I guess it was, yeah, as much as I would have liked it to be truly collaborative, I guess I took, you know, kind of a lead role in that, but it was more of figuring out in what ways do we want to share this information with people. So for the Who's Winnipeg workshop, we did design that collaboratively, and we made like a big poster board about our research. That's what the women wanted to do, with pictures, and that was really cool. And then, yeah, they shared some of their stories, so that was really driven by them. Same with the Growing Local conference. We that was really aimed at, I mean, we didn't have enough time to do everything, but we wanted to really find out people's attitudes, you know, and prejudices. And we designed a survey, and we were going to do an activity called Cross the Line. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's basically people read out statements. It's a really popular activity to examine, you know, our own privilege. And so we were going to read out these statements and have people cross the room just to kind of, you know.
Is this like who's had this experience?
Yeah.
And then you step forward,
have you ever had to, like, you know, worry about where your food comes from? Take two steps forward.
Right.
That kind of thing. So that was what that was really driven by the women. And that didn't really end up happening because we didn't have enough time. Because once the discussion started happening, and, you know, I kind of took a back seat in that, because some of the women, I wanted them to share. And it was really interesting because a couple of the women that I thought would be really talkative weren't, but a couple other women were very talkative, and they kind of, yeah, led the rest of the workshop, and were just, you know, engaging in discussion with other people at the presentation who may have had the same experience, or who, you know, wanted to ask questions. So that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, you know, like, identifying certain people you think,
yeah,
would have been talkative versus those, yeah, that you wouldn't. And the women mentioned, like you said, heavy on pictures on the one,
yeah,
thing. Different learning styles. Like, you've got nine,
yeah,
different people.
Yeah.
A, like, in terms of how they process the information that you're collaborating on, but B, conveying that information to,
mm-hmm,
other people. Like, do you think about, like, multiple forms of conveyance for this information, because people are not going to come at it the same way?
Yeah, definitely. And so that kind of was evident in our data collection, because we used multiple methods, perhaps too many, but I wanted to offer the women a chance to, you know, take part in research whichever way they felt comfortable. So we did a combination of focus groups. So that was with everyone being interviewed together, which, you know, for some people, they feel more comfortable. Then we did go-along interviews, which was individual, as well as I did just individual interviews. And then women also had the opportunity to do food journaling. So it was just a journal keeping track of their, some women, you know, wanted to keep track of their purchases and where they were going. Other women, it was about the experiences and how they felt, you know, accessing food or not being able to buy something this month, or what it is about their journey.
Mm-hmm.
So some women were really comfortable that way. And then we also used photography for some women. So, and then again, yeah, that kind of played out into our knowledge translation, because some women came with me and we did radio interviews. Other women had wanted nothing to do with that. And some women, yes, spoke out in public, and others just wanted someone else to read, you know, their story. Yeah, so that's really cool about doing, like, feminist research and doing, like, yeah, participatory research, where you can just be more flexible about those things and try to, yeah, you know, build on people's strengths and what they already want, you know, what ways they feel comfortable sharing information.
Yeah, I find this particularly interesting because, you know, one of the things I have talked to with other graduate students is that, like, certain fields of study have their own, like, insular language,
mm-hmm,
and it, like, parcels off some information that would be of interest or valid to a wider community, but because of the way that it's, you know, siloed, it's it's really put in a way that it's lost on a lot of people. Oh, yeah. Whereas this sounds like it's about conveying things to everyone. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I tried to do research that was most unlike research.
I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, in an academic environment, I think, you know, participatory action research is the closest you're going to get to, like, you know, just grassroots activism, which, I mean, it's still not anywhere near that, but that's been kind of my background, and that's what I'm most interested in is, you know, activism, public activism, speaking out in public forums. So. Mm-hmm. For me, it was really important to try to design a project that wasn't like, you know, super just academic, just reading articles. Like, that's, I hate doing that. I'm very happy that part's over, but it's necessary, obviously, to learn. But yeah.
Right. You mentioned the Facebook group is still a going concern. Is it an open one? Like, can people kind of keep up to date with what's...
Like, I think I'm probably the only person who still posts. but it's called Women's Right to the City. And that's our Facebook page if anyone wants to check it out.
Search that.
And we just post, like, relevant articles or events, what's happening in the city. Things like that. So...
Right on. And so you said the thesis is already done,
it's
but the
submitted.
Sort of...
Yep.
synopsis or like working paper, let's call it, that you'll provide to Ganichik is still to come.
I just submitted my thesis a couple weeks ago, so I'm giving myself a little bit of a break, but I'm hoping to work on that and kind of my next step is to be in touch with them again and just figure out what it is that would be most useful for them,
right?
And then work on that, and hopefully I'll be done sometime late spring, and then this project will be, I guess, closed, but I'm going to meet with the participants again and hopefully, I don't know, we can maybe do something else or try to keep stuff going in some way. And I'm excited to talk to them about, I haven't seen them in a few years because I, you know, was living elsewhere, but see what, they've been up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we do keep in touch on Facebook, but, you know, it's not the same as a conversation.
For sure. Well, congrats on getting the thesis done. And
thank you.
Thanks for coming in, Cheryl.
Thanks so much for having me.